And we are back. Thank you for joining us for another of the Daily Dots. And joined, as always, by the Brain Trust, Mr. Chase Taylor. And Chase, where did we finish up on the indexes for the day?
Yeah, S&P up 0.32%, and the Qs were up almost 0.5%. Small caps were the leader of the day, up 0.89%. Bond yields on the front end came back a good bit, up about 4 basis points, pretty flat on the rest. Oil also pretty flat. It was down a good bit on the day and kind of picked up towards the end. Yeah, that's about it for the day.
So yeah, kind of surprisingly quiet.
Quiet day, yeah.
Yeah, after yesterday. in absorbing what happened yesterday, what's really funny is I did a couple podcast interviews earlier today, and the public's perception was disappointment that the Fed didn't cut. And so it's the difference between people that don't do it for a living. And I said on one of them, I go, well, that's, I go, you're kind of surprising me right now. And they're like, why? And I said, I came away with the exact opposite. I came away blown away at the fact that he's got inflation moving against him right now, and he's still talking about 3 rate cuts. And the more he talks about 3 rate cuts, the more it gets baked in the cake and the more he's obligated to deliver them. Right? Like, because not cutting rates will, like, you know, and you and I have talked about this before, when they're promising rate cuts, and this is part of the way the Fed works, so we've got to be careful that we're not getting caught up in the jawboning. But if they can talk without actually making the move and get the desired effect, they've said before, like, they're open to doing that, right? So
in some ways, I think the best thing for the market is for the rate cut to always be around the corner but never come. That's just like
the carrot in front of, yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. You just don't want to let the dog actually catch it, right? Right. The dog and the rabbit. And maybe that's what he's trying to do. You know, I hadn't really thought about that, honestly, until we were just sitting here talking and it kind of came out of my mouth. And I thought, you know what? I hadn't considered that. Maybe he's trying to, if you run that through, I don't really think that makes a whole lot of sense. Not with inflation rising.
Yeah. To me, the question really is, do they just have their mind made up for some reason we don't understand that they're just going to cut? Or was 2 prints just not enough? Like, is there a magic number? You know, is three or four hot, you know, months of inflation enough for them to go, just kidding? Like,
The weird part about it to me too was, though, that he's like, over the last 9 months, we've made a lot of good progress. And you pointed out yesterday, and if you look at it, you haven't made progress over the last 9 months.
Yeah, you did, and then you stopped. Like,
well, and then you gave some of it back. Right. I mean, I was under the impression, and I could be off on this, but I was under the impression that inflation on a month over month basis has been up to flat for the past 8 months.
Yes, but like,
it's tricky to say that
on the front end of that 8 months, they were really low month over month prints. So you were annual. So the 6 month annualized or 3 month annualized or 9 month annualized, those were all coming in like at or below target. That's what gave them a ton of faith. Like, hey, we did it. Like, we can back off now. And that's not crazy. You know, when 6 month annualized inflation is below your target, it starts looking like you did it, right? It's just that the last 2 months took 6 month annualized right back to like 3%. So now all of a sudden, like, that number you were really touting, it just went away. So now, instead of them saying, hey, like, we were really touting 6 month annualized, well, now it's higher again, so we're backing off. Instead of that, they're just saying, who cares?
No, they're just moving the goalposts, right. Like you and I have talked about. Well, let's look at another metric now. Yeah.
They refer to it as noise. Some of them have talked about, seasonal factors and, you know, like all the whatever like nonsense you want to throw at something.
If you think about it, man, it's really interesting. And I haven't really thought about it in these terms yet. If you think about how unwilling they were to recognize inflation and move on it and how quickly – they're trying to get rates back down. I want to look at them and go, guys, what is your upset? Why are you so obsessed with such historically abnormal low rates? Do you get what?
Yeah, but to be fair though, at the same time, the lowest they have them getting in the next 3 years is 3.1.
Yeah, but that's still really low historically. That's still really low historically.
True, but they do have the long run rate and their neutral rate. They have still very low historically. Debt is very high historically. So you can't have rates back to, you know, normal levels of 70s, 80s, 90s whenever you have way more debt.
No, I know. Yeah. Yeah.
So,
well, but even that's funny. We're going to bankrupt the country. It's already like, what are you talking? It's just numbers, right? Like, I mean, at this point, I mean, you're going to bankrupt the company. No, you're not. The Fed's just going to print that much money and buy the stuff themselves. Like, you know what I mean? It's just turned into such kabuki theater, right? Like, oh, well, we can't let rates go too high because then the government won't be able to. You're like, government can't fund itself right now. It's, you know, $2.5 trillion deficits. What does that tell you? Right? Like, and again, I know it's not good. It's not, it's getting harder and harder to follow the narrative, man. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yesterday was pretty wild to me. There's no two ways about it.
Yeah. I would have expected. Now I will say I'm not bashing on the Fed because the flip side of it, and I'm assuming that you're probably close to on the same page with me on this, is that I think that what they did made some really low hanging fruit to sock away some really, really nice gains over the next, you know, whatever,
yeah,
you know, 12, 16, 18 month period of time. That being said, I don't think it's good for the long run health of the economy whatsoever.
Not at all. Yeah. It's not good for the economy, for the political situation, like any of it, to allow a significant bubble to go form.
Have you had any more thoughts about what happened yesterday? Any more context? Any interesting things you read overnight that you're thinking about?
No, not when it comes to yesterday, but something I will spend a little time on though is the dollar, because it ripped back again today. So like it's been a wild ride for the last 3 days on the dollar. You went kind of above all the moving averages to 2 days ago, to below them all yesterday, back to above them all today. And this was largely from getting an interest rate cut from the Swiss National Bank last night, which no one expected. So it was kind of a surprise cut. And then, so I think everyone now is like, well, now Europe's going to cut. So like the ECB isn't going to sit here and let the Swiss beat them to the punch. So they're going to have to cut before too long. So now all of a sudden the dollar's firming up against, well, everything lately, but especially Europe and Japan lately, despite the fact that Japan's hiking. So now you get into this weird situation where, like, what do you do if the dollar kind of firms up, even though if you just look at the US, it feels like it shouldn't. But then when you compare it to Europe, like if Europe's going to be first and most aggressive cutting compared to us, like then you can have the dollar kind of be a little bit of a governor on what looks at the moment like, you know, could be a pure liftoff in asset prices.
You know, something this might be ridiculous. I haven't a chance to really think about it, but at some point, wouldn't rate cuts be stimulative to a currency? Rate cuts on a rate, because when you're dealing with an over-indebted situation like we are in our country and all around the world, if you think about it, rate cuts mean lower deficits.
Yeah, it's an area where it gets really tough. So for me, instead of trying to figure it out from that standpoint, I just let the market tell me what the most important factors are, because I think you're right. Like, and I think that's part of the reason the dollar's been strong. Like we've been the least responsible with the budget and a lot of other things, but it's been very good for the dollar because, well, it made our growth go up a bunch. And, you know, I think the Treasury would probably like to see the dollar move lower, because if the dollar moves lower, that really makes it more enticing for foreigners to buy our debt. So unless you want to stuff the banks with all of it or have the Fed buy it, you would like to get the dollar a little bit lower, so that, especially if Japan's going to back away from buying as much as they have, like if you want to talk, you know, it's China and the Saudis and whoever else to kind of bring some more money back to the table, like you're probably going to want the dollar a lot lower.
Well, the only thing about that though is that
you reinvite all the inflation.
Yeah, and this is the kind of the perverse world we're living in, is everything's got two sides to it, yeah. Right? Like for instance, like you just said, dollar weaker would make people want to buy our debt, but it also mean that the debt that they're currently holding is worth less too.
Yeah, at the same time, like they tend to currency hedge it, so they can kind of get away with that.
Yeah.
Getting the dollar down helps them more like efficiently and cheaply currency hedge, which is why you get the dollar down and they kind of step up to the table more.
So anything else we saw in the world of, it's kind of weird. I came in today thinking, man, Chase and I are going to run for a long time, but I feel like everybody collectively blew their wad yesterday, you know?
Yeah, it was a big one.
Yeah, it was.
So I pinned the dollar so much on like the Swiss cut, but at the same time, like we had hot data in the US, existing home sales popped, still negative year over year, but it was a big surprise higher, but above all estimates on a month over month basis. Considering where rates are, that was an impressive month. You had the Philly Fed manufacturing index come in above expectations. S&P's manufacturing PMI came in very solid. So
that's the other thing. That's the other thing that blows me away, right? And you've been all over this from the very beginning about manufacturing. He's getting resolute about his three rate cuts, right? As manufacturing is bottom two.
Right. Manufacturing and like freight are on the upswing.
So this is the thing that I kept going back to last night when I was thinking about this. I will continue to look at the preponderance of economic data right now and shake my head in the sense that I know that what there's the reasons the Fed is giving for what they're doing, the reasons are nonsense. They're not being honest about the reasons.
Right.
They can't be because
they're trying to tell you they think that rates are really tight and restrictive. And
I just don't understand how you can say that.
That pretty clearly is theoretical only because we do not see it.
No evidence.
Economy, right?
No evidence.
It's not in asset prices. It's not in consumer prices. It's not in growth. It's not in realized current inflation. Like it's not in anything.
Well, and you can see how the other thing I think is interesting, and I think it's a huge tell, right? Record in affordability of housing, and the one constraint that housing has is supply right now. Still plenty of buyers, right? Like how in the world can you look at this environment and think it's too tight? Right. I just don't get it.
It'd be like if real estate was melting down
or
something like that, then you could the crazy thing to me is like there's kind of nothing to point to for them to justify this. Like something we talked about for a year is things like delinquencies for younger people and lower income people, like and small business, like and regional banks, like all those areas. Well, even regional banks have really picked up lately. But I think small businesses, lower income, you know, call it quartile and 40 and under people, like those are genuine areas of weakness. But like, if you cut for that slice of the economy, like you end up hurting them by reaccelerating inflation and everything. So like, that's not a justifiable reason.
No, it's like dropping a 10,000 gallon water balloon on a guy because he's thirsty.
And of note, in today's data, the leading economic indicators went positive month over month for the first time in like 2 years.
And we got to cut into that.
So like, you're clearly getting a bottoming in freight and manufacturing and leading indicators. So
you know what isn't bottoming though?
Acceleration of inflation.
Another one we talked about. You know what isn't bottoming right now? Private equity.
Well,
I just talked to a buddy of mine that I'm on the board with.
They're going
to
have a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm looking at the board right now and I'm going, I cannot understand his logic other than election year. Or private equity.
But listed private equity hit a new all-time high today.
On the market.
Yeah. And that's the publicly listed stuff. Like that, there are, you know, there are tons of small private equity shops that do stuff in their own backyard that are probably getting,
you know, as obscene as it is, it makes sense. If he's promising three rate cuts, it makes sense.
Yeah. If they get them, right.
They hit all-time highs today, you said?
Yeah. So there's an ETF, PSP, that's the global. It's global listed private equity.
Yeah, they should have called that.
Look at like KKR.
They should have called that. They should have called that fund escape liquidity. So exit liquidity. That's KKR, what they should have.
Hit a new all time high, and I'm going to show Zach the chart here.
Oh, just whoa!
Ship, right?
Holy smokes! That's
a monthly chart. Ares, pretty much same thing. Blackstone. Blackstone is below its all time highs, but has been really strong of late. So yeah, I mean. pulling up all these different Hamilton.
Well, and here's what's so crazy about them hitting all-time highs. This is the perverse environment the Fed has set up. Everybody in the know knows that there's a bunch of garbage on their balance sheets. And there's good stuff in there too. I'm not saying it's all nasty.
It depends. Like, some of these firms are awesome and some of them are terrible.
Yeah. Even the awesome ones are going to have big write downs on there.
Yeah.
Over the last 15 years, it's impossible. The cycle's been so long, right? Like, especially with the rate change. I mean, there's just so many businesses that were very attractive and viable businesses at 0% rates that just don't work at 5.5%.
Yep.
You know? And that's why, remember you and I were laughing. What was the hedge fund manager that took a 15% write down on his private equity or something like that? And we're all laughing going,
in real life, it was like 60 or something.
Yeah. He marked it down 15.
Yep.
You know,
I probably Chase Colton.
Well, yeah. And so I decided to follow suit. So in my revisions to last year, we outperformed the market by about 7.5%.
Yeah.
I wanted 8, but on an adjusted basis.
Our oil was worth more than
what you saw
on your screen.
It's Bulwark oil is always worth a few more extra bucks, right? Anyway, anything else you got? What are we looking for the rest of the week? Is there anything else coming out tomorrow?
Nope, tomorrow is a very quiet day, so
yeah,
just be flight following.
You know, as far as market outlook, it feels to me like I would expect a little bit of sideways chop maybe here in the interim, a little bit of consolidation here, and could potentially see some weakness, but with the specter of 3 rate cuts coming out in the back half of this year, with the economic data, with deficits and all the other things we're looking at, I was trying to explain to people, am I nervous? Yeah, I'm nervous. Are you kidding me? This is a house of cards. At the same time, it's really hard to make a thesis about why risk assets are going to go down a lot in the next 12 months. Anything can happen. I'm not telling anybody to bet one way or the other or anything like that. But wouldn't you agree with that when you're looking at the fiscal, you look at the specter of 3 rate cuts hanging over us, look, manufacturing appears to be bottoming, you look at the preponderance of evidence, isn't it really, it's just hard for me to envision it, Chase. It's just hard for me to look out and see meaningfully lower asset prices with the board sitting the way it is at present.
Yeah, to me, the base case is much higher asset prices. Even the ones that are completely bananas right now will likely move much higher.
That's the other thing.
As long as the current setup of cutting interest rates into strength in the economy and into reaccelerating inflation, if that actually happens, everything goes much higher.
Well, if our theory holds true about asset prices driving the underlying economy, I don't understand how that happens or how it doesn't happen.
And I think you see that. And so a perfect example of that. Now it's just 1 month of whatever.
Manufacturing, but all looking bullish.
But look at home sales.
Yeah.
Rates are really pretty high right now because the long-term yields kind of went back up over the last couple months.
Home sales are picking back up.
And home sales were up 9.5% month over month. But all estimates. One of the reasons for that probably is, well, look at your 401k statement. Like,
100%.
Yeah, we can buy this house.
100%.
I mean, I don't know. It makes sense to me.
Yep.
And we're right back into like the crypto millionaires, you know,
yep.
being a thing again. So,
yep. Buyers of our house are cash buyers, early retirees, early 60s. Their investment accounts were up 23% last year.
And there you go. And that's another thing is this is something that's been really top of my mind the last couple of days. I can't get it out of my head. And that is an asset boom. Yes. Like it makes people feel like they have money and they spend more, right? But it also makes people in their 50s walk away from work because they can. And then that makes the labor market tighter, which pulls wages up.
Yeah.
Which again, that's inflationary. So it's like another channel that feeds into this river. It's another feedback loop from allowing financial conditions to get too loose that creates new problems for the Fed that somehow they don't see. I struggle to deal with how they don't view really loose financial conditions as a problem for them.
Here's the other problem on what they're doing. And if we're right about the trajectory of it, everybody enjoys the ride up, but every parabola ends the exact same way, right? And that's the issue, is the insane asset prices go away. A lot of times the inflationary pressures don't.
Yeah. I mean, in the last couple of months, the data has been incredibly stagflationary. I mean,
yeah. Yep.
Yeah, so we've had some hot economic data, but we've also had like, I mean, growth was, you know, 5-6%, and now it's more like 2%. So like there has been a pretty decent slowdown. Like retail sales have been crap for 2 months. So like, okay, well, there are some pockets of slowdown, but so to have retail sales falling down while inflation picks back up and reaccelerates, like that's not a great combination. That's very inflationary. Now it's 2 months, so whatever, but I believe it can continue.
You know, if you take three steps back and look at the situation in an unbiased way, it just seems to me like what we've been talking about for a long time is indeed the case. They painted themselves into a corner.
Yeah, no doubt about that.
So anyway, we're going to keep letting you know how small that corner they've painted themselves into gets. And it's just, hey, if you guys aren't fascinated by this stuff, I apologize because I look forward to doing the dots every day just because there's just something new and historic and fascinating to observe. We are truly in undiscovered territory right now, and it's going to be fascinating to see. And my other feeling is if you think you've seen crazy monetary and fiscal policy yet, I think you're just getting warmed up. Right, because if you're waiting for that moment where they go, hey, we've been doing things wrong, we're going to get back to brass tacks, that ain't coming. It's not possible. That ship sailed.
Yeah, and it's not even going to be the Fed that's going to have to do that. It's going to be Congress. So especially good luck on that.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. Don't hold your breath. Anyway, guys, well, thanks for joining us. We will be back tomorrow with the full show and got an awesome interview dialed up for tomorrow. We're going to be joined by Edwin Dorsey. He is out with a brand new... He says it's his highest conviction short selling recommendation he's put out yet. He is a really credible, super sharp young guy. You're not going to want to miss that. So that'll be out tomorrow. That and the show should be both published tomorrow afternoon, early evening. So you won't want to miss that. Anyway, we got to run. See you tomorrow. You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio podcast. Download and subscribe at knowyourriskradio.com.
The opinions expressed in this program are for general informational purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or on any specific security. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor prior to investing. Any past performance discussed during this program is no guarantee of future results. Any indices referenced for comparison are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. As always, please remember investing involves risk and possible loss of principal capital. Please seek advice from a licensed professional. Investment advice cannot be given without a client service agreement. Bulwark Capital Management is an investment advisor representative of Trek Financial, LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor.